Economic, social, and cultural rights are a treaty which came into force in 1966, which the government of Sudan has signed and ratified and has now submitted its second periodic review. These rights concern the rights and freedoms relating to workers' rights, social security, social protection, protection of the family, adequate standard of living, which means adequate food, water, and clothing, the right to health, education, and culture. These rights are also to be found in most national constitutions. They're called the Bill of Rights, and they're also in national legislations and regional international treaties. The people of Sudan could claim these rights through legal process and ask for redress and should be able to obtain redress for them. And if they fail within their own courts, they can raise this at the regional courts in the AU.
Give us examples how this relevant to the situation in Darfur today.
In a situation like conflict in Darfur, some rights will stand out much more because of the situation we're in. And I just wish to maybe highlight one or two that helps us to understand what economic, social, and cultural rights are. For example, based on the Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights Committee's general observations last year when it considered the second periodic report of the Sudan, it made some recommendations and observations about how the Sudan is progressively implementing its commitments to fulfilling economic, social, and cultural rights in the Sudan. And two of them catch my eye. One is their observation relating to the plight of internally displaced persons and their access to basic services. As you know, we have a conflict here, so that IDPs are in 60 camps. And so the basic services to IDPs are very important to them. And they raised this as a concern and recommended that there should be voluntary and safe return of IDPs to their places of origin or wherever they want to settle. The government should ensure, intensifies its efforts to make sure that they have voluntary return and that they can consider all of the rights pertaining to economic, social, and cultural rights to be available to them wherever they are. Safe drinking water, healthcare, education for their kids, and issues like that to make it possible for them to remain where they want to be.
How important are these? They need to be protected.
They're very important because there's key things we have to remember about economic, social, and cultural rights, that if a government fails to observe these rights, then the consequences can be very dire. Also, they can lead to violation of other rights. So, for example, if you fail to provide safe drinking water, children can become sick and get diarrhea. It will have health implications and they may die. So if you take how that happens, you can see that the right to life will be impacted and the right to health services will come into play. So it's very important that economic, social and cultural rights are fulfilled and protected by a government.
What role the government has in ensuring these rights to be enjoyed by the people of Darfur?
What the treaties which governments have signed, in this case, Economic, Social and Cultural Rights Convention, which is a treaty signed and ratified by the government of Sudan, its role is to make sure that it takes steps to use the maximum of its available resources to achieve progressively the full realization of the rights under the Economic, Social and Cultural Rights. And these rights usually include a lot of capital expenditure, for example, building schools, making sure people have access to education, hospitals, and all of those rights. And it must do so without discrimination in terms of region, sex, race. It must make sure that everybody enjoys those rights and has access to those rights. So that's its own obligation. And it must also try as best as it could within its means to make sure that it takes these measures progressively. And what that means is that there is no expectation that you will build all the schools or all the hospitals one, but that you will have a plan in place which will ensure that schools, hospitals, water sources and all of that are planned and that you have measures and you've raised funds to make sure that everybody has equal opportunity to have those resources for their livelihood.
What about UNAMID? What has UNAMID done to ensure that the people enjoy this right?
Within the framework of international cooperation, The international community is usually requested by a member state to support it in the implementation of its obligations, and the international community will respond. In the case of UNAMID being part of the international community, there are several ways that it complements the efforts of government. I want to just mention four that I think are critical. One is the security that we provide for IDPs and vulnerable communities through our patrols to allow the community to do its livelihood activities in safety and security. That's one way. The other way is to facilitate the delivery of food and other items by the United Nations country team, which provides food, World Food Program, or FAO, which helps farmers. All of that is done through the protection by our military and police in making sure that these deliveries are done in safety and security without criminal interventions. And the third way, I think it's one of the ones that come directly from the mission, it's the quick impact projects. And these have been used mainly to rehabilitate water sources and where there are some police stations or health services that are during the war are dilapidated. That fund has been used to rehabilitate these areas, and that has served to complement the efforts of government. And perhaps one of the most important ones is providing health services in remote areas where our military and police are, and that there are no government clinics to provide emergency health care.